Welcome to Two Fools Podcast. This is Drew.
And Dave the Head.
And this is going to be another one in our role-playing series, which I think I want to name. We'll call it the Dungeon Cast. How about that?
Sure.
So that way we can start separating out some of this stuff.
Oh, I don't know. I kind of like the random chaos.
You would.
Yeah.
You and Carl Emery.
I think he's a little bit more chaotic and random than I am, but...
But nonetheless... today I want to talk about DMing more in, say, you know, you've been playing a little bit using maybe some of our advice from the first one. You got your group, you got four or five people in that group, all having a good time, and you decide, I want to DM.
Okay.
We're gonna have some...
I want to DM.
Okay, Dave, well, I'm going to have some pointers for you on all how right. to DM. First and foremost...
Don't put the dice up my nose.
Yes, but I thought you would have learned that by now.
The crayons were lonely.
Okay, first question. Did your group slap you upside the head when you shoved the dice up your nose? If so, you got a good group.
I don't know. They're my dice. It's none of their damn business
if
what I did.
If not, you might have a vindictive group that's just laughing at you constantly.
Or they want their crayons to have friends?
Or they just don't want their crayons back now.
All right. So, we're going to work in Dungeons & Dragons as this example.
Yes. Again, I'm going to stay very broad when it comes to just kind of ideas
okay.
and advice. It doesn't have to match anyone's system.
Okay.
But
if we are going to use any references, we're going to use D&D.
Yeah, because that's the easiest. We both know it.
Sure.
We can both... hang there.
And it's the most common that you're probably going to run into.
Yep. Well, the first thing to DM, normally you would think somebody would say, know the rules inside and out. I am not necessarily on that train, because if you have a group that you've been group gaming for a while, they understand if you're starting something new, you're not going to be the best at it. So.
Well, I think that should be your first point then.
Yeah.
Know your group.
Yeah, know your group. That would be the best thing. Well, know your group as best you can.
Well, yeah.
Certain things you will not know till you run a game or two with these people. Because they will react differently to you when you are the DM than when you're Elric the Archer or whatever you are.
I think you and I have different experiences in this kind. My biggest problem was knowing what the players wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like... All right, I move 20 feet, and I shoot. Do I have line of sight? I do. All right, I'm going to roll. Some people like that style of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
That whole dungeon crawl and slash and bash.
Diablo slice them up.
Sure, sure. Some people really dig that. Some people like, hey, I want to mack on the princess and see if I can't marry into royalty. And they like that role-playing aspect.
Yeah.
And most people, in my opinion, fall in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of times when I make games... I try to have it as in my head as an episode, and this episode we're going to have combat, and this episode we're going to have comedy, and this episode we're going to have a mystery.
Well, in the case of D&D, 9 times out of 10, every episode's going to have combat.
Well,
just because that's kind of how the system's built.
Well, I mean, there's ways to accomplish your goals without it. It depends, on your group and yourself.
There is, but with the group I'm in... they want a combat here and there. You know, it doesn't have to be next, you know, but they want a combat. There's going to be some people that want a combat because they built their combat character
sure.
and they want a combat.
Well, nobody wants to be the expert archer and never gets a chance to use the bow.
Yeah. So, but one of the first things, at least in the way I DM, is you need to have your story.
Okay.
Your main idea.
Sure.
Whatever you want. Say you want to say that the evil wizard Galgamor, or whatever his name is threatening to open a demon portal. Let's go with that.
Well, now you're working under the assumption that people are going to make their own campaign.
Yes.
There are printed material that you could run as the DM.
Yes.
I would suggest, if you're going to be new to DMing, that you run one or two of these just to get a flow of how... the mass market, air quotes, has produced and presented it.
Again, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I don't like them. That's
sure.
just me. I don't like them. So when I hit the ground running as a DM, I made my own world.
But had you not played in some games?
I had played in some. Well, this is assuming they've played as well. And I played in some games, but, you know, I made my own world. Now, some people might go, well, I'm not very creative, or, you know, a lot of people do that when they first start. You know, it's like, I'm not creative, I can't come up with that, that guy's more creative than I am. To tell you the truth, if you got something you like, a book, TV show, a game.
Some source of inspiration.
Some source of inspiration, you can kind of cheat off that a bit. First game I ran was pretty much using the Warcraft mythos, just kind of swirled around a bit.
I had a fiction writer teacher tell me once that borrowing is the most sincere form of flattery.
And that was my first thing. I kind of borrowed off the original story of the Warcraft RTS games, you know?
Yeah.
And just kind of went from there and kind of built my own flavor into it a bit. And
I mean, if you really need some ideas, look at classic literature.
Yeah, you can do that as well.
The Seven Trials, or the 12 Trials of Hercules. The war that's the Trojan War written in the Odyssey.
Poem of Gilgamesh.
Sure.
Beowulf.
I was about to say, I just couldn't remember a stupid name.
Beowulf, Robin Gilgamesh, Hood. Robin Hood. Yeah, you got all sorts of stories.
And that's just the Western culture. That's not even the Eastern culture.
Journey to the West. In Chinese.
Seven Samurai.
Yep. Without the giant mecha from the anime, but moving on.
I don't know anything about that. And I'm sure that you could find stories and legends in Australia, India, being that these cultures are a little bit more different than East or West.
Yep.
Or Africa, or Native American.
Or whatever you want. I was getting ready to say, speaking of Native American, I have something swirling in my head to that tune right now.
Okay.
If I run it, it's not going to be over there because there's too many people.
I'll tell you what, Native Americans, in my opinion, the quote-unquote stereotypes of them would make great druids.
Mm-hmm.
And rangers.
But, so, the first thing you need to do is you need to kind of get your story. At least your main idea.
An over arc.
Yeah, an over arc of, this is what mainly I want to happen during this campaign, however long it may be.
So what was Robin Hood's over arcing story?
To overthrow Prince John.
Yeah, get rid of the Sheriff of Nottingham. And
who was under Prince John.
Right. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm agreeing with you, continuing the idea.
And doing that, he was a thief.
Right. And he
stole from the rich, gave to the poor.
And he gathered up people to help him do so.
And he had Bow Chicka Wow Wow with Mae Marion, but nonetheless.
Well, different levels depending on time of the storytelling. Originally, he got to see her ankle, and that was enough for marriage.
Fine, we'll go with the Disney version. They danced.
Oh my.
But once you have that overarching, you can kind of, depending on what you're like, if you're new, you're probably going to want to write it out. You know, like you said, episode, today I want whatever. Whatever you're going to do, say, you know, this is my first session. I want to get the party to meet.
Well, okay, how about this? Just on the spot, I'm going to come up with an arc.
Sure.
On the spot, I want the arc. There's a swamp. The heroes have grown up in the cities around the swamp, and it's always been a problem for the past 75 years.
Monsters coming out of it and stuff.
Sure. Just all kinds of troubles.
Yep.
And the whole arc is these new heroes are going to quell the problems in the swamp.
Cool. Now, the next thing is, after your players have made their characters,
knowing what the arc is going to be really helps them make their characters.
Yes, it really does. So you want to express, this is what I plan to do.
Nobody wants to be the prissy cleric of cleanliness and going into the swamp. Unless they like that sense of humor.
Well, unless they're good enough at it to make it come off as funny and not annoying.
The other side of the coin is, nobody wants to be the camel-riding, scimitar-wielding desert warrior when the campaign isn't going anywhere near a camel or a desert.
Bumpy.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, and you let them know this is kind of what we're going to be doing, this is kind of the areas it's going to be in. And they'll make their characters. Now you gotta get these characters together.
And that's where
usually the bar comes in.
Yes, the classic D&D trope of the bar. However, I was going to say this is probably either going to be the easiest or most difficult concept ever. and it depends on what you do and what your players do.
9 times out of 10, your players are gonna, you know, you're gonna, they're gonna be in town for whatever reason. A crier, a bulletin board, or whatever is gonna go, the local magistrate or whatever is offering this reward to do these things.
There's all kinds of hooks.
Yeah, stuff like that. Treasure's a real good one, because low-level characters, they want stuff.
They're going to need it to survive.
They're going
to
need it, so they want it.
The other thing could be is if anyone has created a character with a quote-unquote story or drive, those help you. The paladin wants to protect the people. The young knight-errant needs to prove himself to his father. The young wizardess has got to finally learn how to wield the powers that contort the universe to her will.
The young bard is out for good stories.
Yes.
So, whatever you gotta do to make them interested...
There
you go. Do it. And they'll show up, and you can decide if they're the only ones to show up, if NPCs show up, and maybe you got...
See, in my arc, I think I would have a lord who calls any and all willing participants and have the PCs be 75 to 80% of the people who do show up.
And then you maybe have an NPC or two that show
up. Two or three. Yeah. And they may not even be there to help. They may end up being trouble down the road.
Perhaps. Or you could work it as a rivalry, you know?
Yep.
Both of you are out to get the rewards, and whoever does it first gets it.
Now, my other favorite trope, besides the bar trope, is the military trope.
You're all in the military together.
Or you're in some form of militia or something.
And so you would know each other because you sleep together, you wake together, you...
Train together.
You fight together.
Yep.
So that's another one. But, you know, once you've got this going, and you have your main idea, you want to either... A, write out each thing, or you're kind of like me, and this comes with probably a bit more experience and knowing my group, I kind of wing it.
Well, so now you keep saying my group, so you're playing a game to the group.
Yeah.
And I'm more along the line of 50-50 with
the group. I have my own story, but I know how my group works.
Right.
So I tailor that story enough to where I know I'm not going to hit this juncture where my group just...
goes left.
You know, well, not goes left, just goes the hell out of town and never comes back.
Oh. Well, I mean...
which is always an option, sadly.
I have this kind of mindset, because I've been playing for a long time. I've gotten to the point that sometimes I want the group to step out of their comfort zone.
Well, I can do that and still tailor it to my group. I know what will get them to go where I want them to go.
Well, for example, I have a friend. He and I have been playing since high school. He likes to play the warrior type characters. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, his characters will have a twist. Maybe they're the swashbuckler. Maybe they're the honorable one. But he likes to play the warriors. Here recently, the last game we started playing, his character still is a warrior, but it's a warrior with some divine magic. He's going to move into either paladin or cleric and mix them a little bit. And I think it's good for him to explore other avenues. And so that's why I'm saying, you know, if you create this whole idea of a story arc and then everybody decides, no, I don't want to go to the swamp, let's go down south and see what's there, you know, then your whole story arc is garbage and you get to create a new one.
Yeah. Well, again, knowing how some of your characters play, how your players play, helps. Because you can just tailor enough to get their interest, get them rolling with it. I know certain people are going to react certain ways. I know that there's some people that, you know, I'm just going to put that character over in a corner, because no matter what I plan for, it's going to go left.
Okay.
And so, I tend to wing stuff. Again, this comes from more experience. But, you know, let's say I have this idea. They're going to go in the swamp. They're going to fight a big bad troll.
Okay.
By the end of it. The troll originally is somewhere over here. Well, they don't go over there. They go north instead.
Sure, instead of east.
Well, now the troll just changed position. It's going to be up there anyway.
Well, now that's a traditional tool that most DMs will tell you happens.
Yeah, but see, that's kind of my counteraction to the modules. Because the modules are like, this is here, at least the modules I dealt with.
True, but if you're going to play a module, most people who are going to do so have kind of agreed to play the module.
Not always.
Well, I mean, if you just show up on Tuesday and go, okay, guys, we're going to play the Silver Hand module and no one knows what's going on, then, you know, your group might be a little more disappointed in you. But if you tell your group, listen, I want to run some modules. It's going to be three modules that work together. It's called the Mirror of the Dead Men, and I'd like to run it. It's going to be here in this swamp, and it's going to deal with the undead, and it's going to deal with some ancient evil. So make your characters accordingly. You know, then they know what they're getting into when you show up.
Again, but I prefer to keep it a bit.
Well, yes. Now,
lesser.
First rule: know your group. Yeah. Second rule: be flexible.
Yes.
Be adaptive. If you create an adventure and you think, well, okay, they're going to leave city, they're going to go to the swamp. The first thing I want them to find is this small old ruined tower to use as their base of operation as they deal with goblins and alligators and eventually that big bad troll who's been eating people who's been traveling the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you say that's what they've got to do, A, B, C, D, nobody wants to play that game.
Correct.
If you make them go A, B, C, D, nobody wants to play that game. They want to explore. They want to choose the adventure. Now, that doesn't mean you can't go, oh, you guys decide to not go near the tower. That's fine. While you're traveling through the swamps, you see trails of goblins. And everyone needs to make a spot check to see if they see anything. Oh, goblin raiding party has decided to attack you.
Well, in case of fifth, you would just roll against their
passive
you know, perception.
Whatever the appropriate skill is.
Which I like, because that... lovely side rule. Whenever the DM says make a check to anyone, the whole group is on alert.
Yeah, well, see, I've had people do that. I've had, as a DM, people do that and tell them they all, quote-unquote, passed and detected nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was nothing there for them to detect.
Well, no, that's different. But I'm just saying, as soon as you say, somebody make me a check, I don't care how good a role players they are, the rest of the group goes, something must be up if he made that.
That's your group. Yeah. I've played with people that didn't do that.
Well,
it's like, hey, what do you do? Well, I didn't see Bill make a check, and I've been busy with my loot, so I miss it.
Now, again, I'm just saying, the best thing I've found in that case is to go ahead and just have, like, their spot stats or perception stats just written down, and you can just go real quick.
And here comes step number three. How much work do you really want to do?
See, I don't have a problem with doing work.
See,
it gives me something to do.
I don't like that. I have no interest in keeping up with your character sheets.
Well, I don't keep up with the character sheets. I just hunt down the pertinent information I need, which is, if this is third, let's say, what is their spot, what is their listen, what is their search, and whatever modifiers go with
it. Well, now, see, search is only done when people want to do it.
Yeah, so spot and listen. Right. What are those two things? Here you go. Okay, I got them. I can quickly, if I need to.
Right.
And not raise suspicions. Now, as you were pointing out, say, you know, you're like, oh, you're going through the swamp and you see goblin tracks.
Right.
Well, they might say, well, I'm going to listen to see if I hear any, you know.
Right.
Maybe they don't have search or tracking or whatever. And they're going, I'm going to listen to see if we're being followed or something like that. And they roll a listen. And depending on what they roll, you can do a couple of things. You can say, like, say they roll and you're like, oh, you don't hear anything. That doesn't mean nothing's there. They just didn't hear it.
Right.
You want to make sure to, you don't want to say there are no goblins here, because then if goblins show up, you're a bold-faced liar. you want to say, or they're looking in a cave and they're going, I roll a spot check to look in the cave to see if anything's there, and you say you don't see anything.
Or you notice nothing.
Yeah, or you notice nothing. That doesn't mean that something isn't there. They just didn't perceive it.
You can also do the opposite. You could say you see shadows move around, and then when they explore and there's nothing there for real,
yeah,
it was their own imagination that drug them in.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. I'm just saying that's a good habit. When I originally started, I was very bad about if they succeeded, there's no traps.
Right.
No goblins. There's, you know, definitely saying there was nothing there.
Yeah, when someone fails their trap finding, you don't say you failed your trap finding. You say you detect nothing. You find
no traps. That doesn't mean there aren't traps, just you find no traps.
And if this sounds kind of annoying to you, it will be a habit you will get into quickly, I promise.
Yes, it helps the flow, and it just helps to...
The other side of that coin
not
is...
not have arguments.
You don't have to use these.
Yeah, you don't, if you don't want them.
If you don't want people stealthing around or ambushing or traps.
There's going to be people out there that want to stealth. They like that.
No. I mean, if you don't want the monsters to do it. If you don't want to have to keep up.
No. If you don't want the monsters to stealth, you can just have them rampaging through the countryside.
Sure. You know, and it's up to you to decide how you want to present your stories.
Yeah, it's just whatever your style is, and number two, whatever your group think, you know, whatever you told your group you're running.
Right.
If you've told them we're going to go just on a hack and slash Monty Hall adventure, then, you know, maybe you don't need as much sneaking or being cautious. It's just running into battle time after time.
Or trying to find the one stupid plant in the middle of the swamp that saves you from the poison because you accidentally got poisoned by the trap. And, oh my God, what's the mystery? And no one can figure it out because no one's built a character to do it.
Correct. Or you can have other games where maybe the first session, they don't even deal with the swamp. They have to take care of something in town.
Which leads them into the swamp.
Maybe there's a bandit gang, and they're using the town and the swamp as kind of a cover and an underground racket. You know?
And this is where Drew's advice of having an over-arc really helps you.
So you know exactly where you kind of want to go with it.
The main trick is... realize you're not giving direct directions. You're not going down the street 300 yards and making a left. You're just going to that side of town.
Yes. And, you know, be descriptive, but not overly, not clinically descriptive.
Because the term is called railroading, and you don't want to railroad people into the adventure.
And at the same time, you don't want to just be so clinical that your group can't really get a picture in their head, you know? If you just go, well, you move 300 feet down the street and there's a white sign to your left, that doesn't really help them get in the frame of mind.
And you open the door to find the mayor.
Yeah. Whereas if, say, they're in a cave and they you turn down the hallway, the carved hallway to the left, you hear slight drippings of water. As you're moving forward, every once in a while you think you hear something breathing.
Now, so we've gone through a lot of beginning tips.
Yeah.
Let's go through why someone might want to do this. Because realistically, DMing is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. One of the main reasons I got into DMing is I found I like to write stories. I like to write stories. And so this was a way to write a story. One of my problems, because I used to do actual writing.
Right.
But one of my problems is I would start writing something, get like 10 chapters in, and go, I finished it in my head, no need to...
Finish it on the computer.
And a lot of people in my online writing group did not...
Appreciate it.
They're like, you left us hanging and it was so good. I didn't think it was, but you know...
Well, no one likes their own work, realistically.
But whereas in role-playing, I can craft a story, and that story will change. That story will never be 100% complete the way I thought it would be.
Right.
Because I have active participants that are going to change it. And I have to adapt to that.
Now, that is an aspect I enjoy as well, is creating an idea of a story, and then... me, I'm a lot more looser with the story arc. That whole idea with, like, the swamp. That's as far as I need to come up with. If I have a specific goal in mind, like, for example, I want the old castle to be found, or there's an artifact out there that needs to be found, or something like that, if I want to use that as the hook, I'll do that. But realistically, hey, we have a swamp, here's some troubles, let's see what kind of characters you're going to make, and then I'll adapt my story to the characters that are made. Recently, we did this kind of political game. The one guy was going to be the bard who is trying to rouse the people against the government, and the other guy was a monk who learned how to fight, and he was going to be that the bard's sidekick and protector. The third guy was a hobbit who wanted to be like the hobbit version, or halfling version of Batman. Street justice.
Mr. Bilbo.
That's right. Bring the car around, Alfred.
But,
and then the fourth person ended up being a rogue in the beginning.
A rogue,
whatever. Who was in it for wealth.
As most rouges are.
So, you kind of had two dudes who were really into social justice. One guy who was sidekick to the first, you know, one of the bard. And the other person who came in and went, I'm the rogue and I need money.
I'm going to clean up.
How do we mix these together? How do they work together, you know? And while the game did not go as the players initially thought they were, because to be honest with you, I had no intention of letting them topple my quote-unquote kingdom. Because it's an integral part to the world dynamics. Which is another topic we're going to get into in a few minutes of building a world. I did, however, get them invested in different aspects of not only the city, but the people, and they ended up being heroes of the people. Mm. They ended up finding other communities that needed to be helped, and they did. They ended up on a quest for an artifact so they could bring it back to the main city and bring religion back to the city. So, to some people it mattered, and they ended up improving the life.
I was more doing the hallelujah hands, but
they improved the quality of life of a lot of the NPC peasantry, and then the one person who was trying to start this whole...
So they could surf their potatoes in new clothes instead of old clothes.
or whistle while they did it. And then the one guy who wanted to, like, raise the population against the evil king, he ended up finding something that directly helped his cause. It wasn't what he wanted in the original, but I like to say that it was of equal but different value.
Okay, since we're doing examples, I can do a real quick one.
Sure, go ahead.
Of one that spawned out of just about everything we're talking about. One, taking an idea that it already exists and just kind of adapting it to you. There's a guy I listen to online, he does some of this stuff too, you know, talks about different adventures, things like that. And he was talking, I don't know if you've ever heard of Thieves World.
Vaguely.
And he was talking about a campaign he ran, the Thieves World campaign. And from that, I came up with an idea. I was like, okay, because his campaign took place in one city. And so I kind of came up with the idea, okay, what would happen if it was kind of a political game in this large city? You know, you have very different tiered classes, so on and so forth. And I presented that to my group with some other things I'd made up. I don't need to go in complete detail. And they went with it. And we had some rogues. We had one guy who was a fighter who wasn't even a member of the city/state. He was a mercenary whose group got wiped out other but him, and he came to the state to assert himself and say, I'm looking to rebuild my mercenary group.
All right.
And, you know, we had all these people, and a lot of them were involved in the city. Some of them weren't. Some people in the group were actually spies for the evil Overwatch kind of deal, because I had, like, two versions of the guard. One was the... We're lawful good paladins, and the other we're lawful evil or something to that nature.
You had the regular police and then the secret Gestapo police.
Well, both of them were the regular police. They just dealt with... What it was one was the sun guard, one was the moon guard.
Oh, okay.
One protected the city during the day, the other did at night. Thus, the moon guard was the sneakier, stealthier. We might just kill you instead of bringing you in. And so... Yeah, you know, one of the characters was actually a spy for the Moon Guard organization, though played very well, so no one really realized it. And just using that, you know, I built my own little world and kind of a little bit out from it, because, you know, it didn't exist in a vacuum.
Right.
And went on and gave them stuff. A lot of the stuff happened because they happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, was it events that were already going to happen, or did you create the events as they were in the wrong places?
Little com A, little com B.
Okay.
But, you know, they would be working on something. Like, one of the female gamers, her character was produced from a noble family and a hooker having a child out of wedlock. And she was trying to manipulate things to get money to make sure her mother was taken care of, stuff like that.
Sure.
And, you know, there were a number of people that were in there that were trying to manipulate things. Well, when you pull enough strings...
Tapestries fall on your head?
Well, when you pull enough strings, the puppet masters of the sea go... You know, they turn and they look like...
Who's playing with my strings?
Yeah, who's messing with my stuff? And 9 times out of 10, that would be a man by the name of Deckard Cain.
Okay.
Who was the captain of the Moon Guard. And so, after a couple of times of him running in, him or his lackeys running into them, and the last time they did, they were just in the worst situation possible, dead bodies, and they were getting the frame up. He pretty much called him in and said, look, I know you didn't do it, but everyone else thinks you did it. So we can do one of two things here. A, I can give you a job here and there, and you do it. No questions asked, just do it. Or B, I can string you up on the gallows tomorrow. Which would it be?
Time to set fire to the city.
They took his job. But after a while, they started working behind his back, and, you know, which I expected them to. I did not expect them to just go, oh, we won't do anything, you know.
Now, did you have a great story arc planned out, or?
Well, I had some of it planned out, and others kind of got dropped in my lap by my characters.
I personally love table talk when people start talking during the game. Gosh, I hope we don't run into a Wyvern or anything. Well, that's funny. You should say so.
Well, one of the things that led to kind of the end game was one of Randy... Well, sorry. The same character that was concerned about her mom and stuff, she didn't know her father and was trying to figure out which noble family she came from.
I hope it was Cain.
No, it was not Cain. I forgot the name I gave them, but nonetheless, it was a cursed line. It was a line that after shenanigans between her mom and the young nobleman happened, bad things happened. Because it turned out he wanted to marry the hooker. The father of the family said, no son of mine's marrying a hooker. You're going...
to the north.
You're going with the caravan to the west, and you're going to be a traitor like you're supposed to be. And he went kind of crazy and, you know, became a lich. And
I hate when that happens.
And through some what was left over of his humanity, he wanted to bring his city to where he was, which was in Ravenloft.
Oh, okay.
I was kind of using Ravenloft because I wanted to play there for a bit. But so he was stuck in Ravenloft as one of the minor kingdoms or whatever, and he wanted to bring his city to where he was, and that was the end game. And they stopped it, and they kind of became princes of the city, pretty much. But, you know, that was a quick something that I took off of one guy's storytelling of a setting and just molded it to what I wanted.
Adapted it to the actions of the players. And then adapted a already established world of Ravenloft into your game.
Yeah. Mainly because I've been reading it for quite a while, and I was like, I really want to play here.
So, do we want to go into the next step of world building, or do we have something else in the beginning of the DMs?
World building is good. There's a couple of options in world building. I'm going to mention this right now. I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's a process called world burning. What that is a DM comes up to his group and says, hey, we're going to play in this game. Help me make it.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, world burning is the DM and the players sit down, and the DM goes, okay, so world. Are there multiple countries? Is there one country? You know, asking them questions. And the players decide, we want 3 countries. So, okay, what's country one made? What's it like, you know, and it's just the players assigning values to this different stuff. So that way they have a bit more knowledge of the world.
I do something different. I normally start in a smaller scale of either, let's say, a countryside or something of that effect. And then as they explore and find new things, I create new things. Now, the difference is that my D&D campaign, whatever people were finding in 1995 when I started really running, it still exists now in 2015 in the D&D game. So that's why my world is in some ways very wide and bendable, but in some ways it's also kind of rigid because things already exist.
I think that's how we differ, is you like to keep this one world.
I do.
And I like to make worlds, play in them, and trash them.
Well, see, I have found that when people... Well, okay, for example, my brother played when he was a kid, and then here we are 12, 15 years later, he's playing again new characters, and he's hearing names and seeing history that mattered to him or that he never even played in but heard other stories from other players. Mm-hmm. So it allows players to feel that connection, that it's part of theirs. I guess if they sat down at the table and built the damn thing, it would feel like theirs too.
I'm just saying, that's an option. World burning.
Sure.
But again, you like to keep on... there is one world I do keep in my back pocket, and I bring it out every once in a while. Twin Worlds Legacy.
Sure.
But I don't run it as often because I get bored with it. Because people remember enough to where it seems like I have no surprises.
Well, see, I found that to be a downside because everyone we played with had already done two or three campaigns in it. And I came in it new. And I always felt like I was the idiot for not knowing all these stories. And, you know, it's like, I didn't even know necromancy wasn't a thing in your world. No, it wasn't even available, and that didn't make any sense to me. And everybody's like, it's just Twin Worlds. Well, you know, apples are red. What if I want a green one?
Those exist.
Exactly. So why doesn't necromancy? You know what I'm saying?
It's because of the backstory.
Sure, but everyone acted like I should know the backstory, and I didn't.
Well, again, that's the downside of a long-running campaign. If you're not bringing a completely new group into it, there's going to be that issue.
Well, one of our friends said about a game that I ran in my world, it feels like there's a lot of backstory here and it doesn't make any sense to me. And I asked him, I was like, well, did it really hinder you? Did you feel like somebody got an unfair advantage? He was like, not really. It's just there was a lot of side jokes and I didn't quite get them all. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with you not getting the side jokes. I'm okay with me not getting the side jokes. But when aspects of the game are changed, i.e. one of the eight schools of magic or whatever it is not there anymore.
Actually, I think you're remembering it a tad wrong, because in Twin Worlds...
Or necromancy was only allowed by the bad guys.
All arcane magic was forbidden.
I don't remember that, but okay.
It depends on... There's multiple time periods in that world that I use. But in the base setting, it was born one Saturday morning when I got an idea into my head. What would a world be like if the church were like the medieval Catholic Church and controlled everything, and arcane magic was forbidden? Not that it didn't exist, just was forbidden.
Okay.
That's kind of what it spawned out of. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Sure.
And that's another way of world building is... You don't necessarily have to have the whole world done when you're running. You can start with, like, your starter city, and you plan that out a bit, you know? And so, say they go on an adventure, and they're like, well, we want to go to this other city, and you can make up a city there, and just start making as you go.
Another good style for starting DM, and I enjoyed this one, was assigning your players to a caravan as the quote-unquote guards. I know this sounds silly and you're looking at me weird. I don't know why.
Charge!
I don't get it.
My fighter character from that one campaign you ran like four.
Yeah, but you guys weren't really a caravan guards as much as you were assigned by the church to go out and explore.
I know, but there was a caravan involved and my reaction was charge.
So with the caravan guard aspect, you're not tied to any one spot and no spot is more important than any other. Go along the road, goblins attack. You can track the goblins back to a cave. There you got your defense of the caravan. You got your dungeon crawl. You go to a new city, and all of a sudden, one of the caravan's wives gets kidnapped. Now you've got your espionage and your political intrigue because, oh, maybe somebody in the city kidnapped her for nefarious reasons. Or maybe the caravan guy and his wife are actually hidden nobles. It's up to you. So I remember playing a caravan-themed game for well over 6 months and it creating a lot of character development and tropes for our games, a.k.a. the Lucky Bastard, the bar that one of our bastard heroes had rebuilt, and it became a joke in other games.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's the constant moving. That's a good way to kind of do, you know,
a variety of different styles of games.
Well, a variety of different styles, and the main portents is the characters.
Right, right.
You know, they don't have to deal with city higher ups, except for maybe once.
Right, the
every
evil
year and
the evil Baron is not more important than the characters because you left him in the dust 60 miles back.
Correct. Or you know, the evil Baron doesn't really pay attention to your characters because he knows they're a part of a caravan. They'll be gone soon.
Sure, sure.
If he's smart, that is, he might be retarded, but stupid. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
He might just be stupid. We don't know. But the world building, because I think that's one of the things that discourages some people from running is the idea that they have to have the world done before they run. And I don't think you have to.
Sure, sure. And then there's option C for world building.
That kind of rhymed. The world done before they run.
Okay.
I'm a poet and I didn't know it, Silent Bob.
Keep on, Lunchbox. option C is not an option I like, but it is an option that is usable. And that's take the world you do know and manipulate it to fit what you want. For example, I'm a big fan of Dragonlance. That being said, I don't want to go to Solace and see all the houses on the house because the trees are gone. Because in your version of Kryn, the whole fucking forest burned down. Well, in Solace, a lot of the buildings are up in the trees because they have huge Valenwood trees, whatever.
Okay.
The point is it's a central theme to a lot of the books and the modules and stuff. And if you just start going, oh, well, I like this, but fuck all the forest, I don't want that there. Some people can go, okay, that's cool, now what? And some people like me are going, oh, no, no, let me fix my glasses because it says on page 13 the Valenwood trees are important.
Yeah, and see, that's the only issue with C, is if your players know it as much or maybe more than you do,
And they care,
then there can be some game-stopping moments where you're arguing whether or not the trees should be there.
Well, arguing might be a stern thing. If you're getting to the point that there's that much discussion, then you need to really reconsider A, who you play with, or B, what you're doing. Because either you're running the game wrong, and I hate to say it that way, or the people who are playing with you are not as open as you think they are.
And I do some of C, too, but I have the benefit, and I'm the only one that really knows the universe well enough to make those debates.
Okay.
Because, going back to BDSM, I run the Slayer's World, which is an anime.
Right.
Every once in a blue moon, I will run a campaign out of that.
Well,
and I'm the only one that really knows most of the mythology and all that stuff. So if I say, oh, it's like this, most of my group goes, okay, he knows what he's talking about. Because they did. I got obsessed with Slayers when I was younger.
Sure.
So I know a lot about it. The rest of them didn't get obsessed. So they're like, we know these facts, but we don't know these deep facts. So we'll just go with what Drew says.
I'm going to go with one last thing for this whole new to the DM thing. Recently, myself, a friend, and two other people, one started with us and another one came in later, we started playing with a new DM. Not only to DMing, but new to role-playing. And while his stories and his world creation were very involved and very well created, his understanding of levels of threats and not quite understanding the lengths that players will go to sometimes caused stress, for lack of better terms. Now, I myself got my first character killed and my second character ostracized, and I did not have a problem with the way the story went. I did feel that the character who got killed got involved in a threat that was way beyond his level. When you're a level 3 character and the monster has the capability of being the equivalent of a level 16, I think, you know, rule number one, if it has stats, players will try to kill it.
Yeah, if you stat times. It, they will murder it.
You know, you may think that your action is considered to be humorous or a joke, but not everyone does. So, your bad guy comes in to your house. Okay, so hero guy A is running around town doing things, but bad guy A has been working behind the scenes to manipulate hero A. So you decide, as the DM, it's funny if he breaks in and steals the family heirloom to try to manipulate him later. Then he shows up and goes, hey, I got your dad's heirloom, what are you going to do for me? And guy hero A decides, well, I'm going to draw my sword and stab that dude in the face. You never saw that coming because you wanted the game to go a different way, and now your hero A is dead, and everybody's like, what the hell?
Pro tip, villain speech counts as a free action.
Well, that's a hell of a good tangent.
I'm saying that because my group, I will never do thematic speech ever again unless it's under initiative.
Yeah, a lot
of... Because they will kill him before the speech is
Yeah,
over,
they like to try to do that with me, too.
So, yeah, villain speech... If you roll initiative, it's a free action.
Bring a stone skin and ignores attacks for a little while. And then so, that way, if they do beat the bad guy, the stone skin has been all used up.
Yep, something like that. But I will guarantee you, if you have a... And most people want to make it thematic, because we all see the movies. We want to kind of emulate that from
time
to time.
I think a lot of our players tend to forget that's the moment for us to role play.
Yeah.
And they don't let that happen.
Yeah, well, because I've done it time and time again. I'll start the speech, and then somebody says, I shoot an arrow at him.
Okay. So, but back to what I was getting at is, as a beginning DM, you need to realize that you can't plan for everything.
Yep.
So unless you're willing to wreck your own campaign by killing the people, or it gets kind of frustrating. You think how you would feel as a player in that situation. You know, the guy breaks into your house and steals your thing. What's your response? Well, you're the hero. You're used to dealing with everything in one of three ways. And when none of those ways work because everyone's got the magic MacGuffin, what are you going to do?
MacGuffin.
I remember running a game with you once and you got frustrated because the guy had a ring... He had a ring that countered a spell. And you were like, well, you know, I'm a wizard. That's what I do. And I'm like, well, he has a magic item. This is what it does. But it only countered the spell one time. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? And you're going to have moments of frustration. That's fine. That's part of the game. You get frustrated as a player. You get frustrated as the DM. Sometimes you get frustrated watching a movie, don't you?
Sleep!
And then sometimes you're going to find running gags. And that's fine, too.
I found running gags. But also, I will say, I was going to say something that just flew through my head. Go ahead and say what you're going to say. Well, I might get it back.
It's fine. It's just that maybe pull your punches in the beginning. It's okay for the heroes to be heroic. That's what the story's for. You should have fun challenging them, not putting them in their place. If you're having fun by being, for lack of better terms, a bully, then maybe you're playing the wrong game.
Okay, I got what I was going to say. That did help spark my memory there. If you're playing a D&D or certain things, don't be afraid of death. Death is not an end in D&D. If you are playing with a lower level group and, you know, what I mean is you can res people.
Yes, there is resurrections and raise dead spells
so
in high fantasy.
So death is not the end in D&D.
Well, in the game Legends of the Five Rings, which is a very Japanese and Asian mythology-based game, sometimes death is the right answer.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying in high fantasy stuff like that, don't fear death. I know a lot of DMs that first get started, they're so afraid that if a player dies, it's going to ruin everything.
Well, now, I have a rule of... In Dungeons & Dragons, let's go with a 3rd edition, I try to make everything not soft, but definitely got some bumpers, some safety bumpers for the first 3 levels.
Put them in a padded room for 3 levels.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
But, again, in higher levels, they've traveled probably enough that they can afford to res that guy.
Well, the bottom line is by 7th level, if they got themselves into a properly constructed trap... They deserve to die.
And if they survive, they should have enough resources to get people back.
And if you're role-playing with mature and story-driven people, they may enjoy the fact that their character went out like a hero.
Yeah, there are some people that, you know, you can kill them. They're like, oh, that's fine. I'll make another one. They like making characters.
Sure.
So they're fine if the guy goes out with his boots on and just dies, as long as you're not cheating them. But a thing I might suggest, if it's lower level and you're like, I don't want to kill anybody, if it looks like, you know, because sometimes it happens. It happens. No matter how much you bumper room something, sometimes it happens.
Hey, you're going to get a crit.
Yeah. There's going to be a crit or something. It's going to happen. There are other options, like some things I've done where I've pulled players aside and look, you're dead. If I go by the rules, you're dead. Would you prefer, like, let's say he gets a crit, something stabbed him in the chest.
Would you rather have your character maimed?
Yeah, would you rather take a wound, like, you'll have a scar, and maybe you talk like this, you know, because it hit his lung or something like
or
that.
Or maybe your character doesn't have a left arm anymore.
More, or something like that. Would you rather take that and continue role-playing, or do you want to be dead?
Right.
And that's an option.
That's not a bad option. I was sitting here thinking, a lot of times when you face that aspect, I mean, as the DM, many games will tell you your number one tool is to cheat.
Yeah.
To never let dice roll or rules get into the way of a good time.
Correct. Both ways. Your good time or your player's good time.
Right.
So,
I can tell you now, there's been many times where I have fudged the dice to make monsters not eat someone.
Yeah.
But there have been times where
I have fudged the dice to make sure they actually take damage and it's kind of challenging.
Yeah. You know, you just walk through 8 rooms and nobody's taken a scratch.
Yeah.
Time for giant fucking spiders who can't miss.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? I had this plan. No. Let's up the difficulty a bit.
So, and you gotta be willing to own up to your mistakes. I put giant troll skeletons in a room that made no sense for them to be in because I didn't realize giant troll skeletons were giant.
They got stuck. They couldn't fit through a hallway.
Right.
And if nothing else, that gives your players that moment, especially my guy who could sit there at the end of the hallway going, ha ha, burning heads! If nothing else, it gives your players a moment to go, look at me!
Well, you know, manipulating the environment as a player does help.
Yeah.
So, any final thoughts?
Have fun. That's the best final thought I can tell you is if you're stressing out over running a game, you might want to say, hey, can we shelve it for a while?
Right.
You know, especially if this is your first time. If you're not having fun, your players aren't going to be having fun.
My final thought is, and Drew's going to argue with this one, run a module. Just one. A small one. That way you don't have to worry about the creation. That way you don't have to worry about the balance. Everything has already been created that way. And you can learn the nuances of telling the story and dealing with the unknown as your players start manipulating the module. Because no one goes from room 1 to room 2 to room 3. Ever.
That would be all I say. If you run a module, make sure to be flexible.
Yes, I mean, you have to be flexible. You should, let me rephrase that, you should be flexible. If you're not being flexible, then you're not really telling a story as much as you are judging dice rolls. And if that's the style of game you want to play, then more power to you.
Well, every once in a while, just good hack and slash is great.
Yeah.
But most people want something more. They want to invest in a character. They want to invest in a city. They want to invest in a story, whatever.
And I think my last final thought would be the same suggestion we had to being a new player. Start with a group around 4.
Yeah.
You're the DM. Don't DM for more than 4. 4 to 6 people, tops.
I would say 4 if you're just starting DM.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, realistically, that's...
Because another thing you're going to...
Well, the 5th or 6th player gives the players a little bit of advantage, so you don't have to worry about killing them so quickly.
But at the same time, it's also splitting your attention again one more time.
Well, as long as the party doesn't split, you should be okay.
I'm just saying, that can be an acquired skill.
Yeah.
Being able to go, okay, I got that. Okay, you want to do that?
Hey, man, if you got 5 players and every one of them's playing warriors, you're going to have troubles anyways. You know what I mean? Because everyone's going to run up to the monster. Everyone's going to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just going to come with your players and learning the game. But, yeah, 4, no more than 6. And I would draw a hard line at 6.
Yeah. Well, again, the place where it's over six, it's not my house. So.
Well, no. I mean, as a beginning DM.
Yeah.
Now, I've run games where, had, like I said, 12 people, and it was not, D&D-wise, it was not a problem, because I know the rules backwards and forwards of DM. Yeah. Dungeons & Dragons. I can manipulate my knowledge, I can adapt to the players, and the group I was playing with all agreed to make a military order group, and they all had reasons to work together.
Well, see, that's different, whereas from what I usually go with, if there's 12, they all want their own side plots and whatnot, and that just gets to the point where you're like...
ripping out your hair?
Yeah, well, again, welcome to the thing I'm running now. I'm splitting with Coop, because...
Well, I mean...
I need help controlling that many side stories.
Well, you guys made it worse, because you put two games together as one.
Yeah, but it's a fun experiment.
It is a fun experiment. I like story A more than story B, mm-hmm. but I knew that going in.
Well, if nothing else, again, have fun out there. Enjoy your games. This is Drew.
And this is Dave.
See you later.